Welcome to another edition of the Minnesota Beercast. I am Andrew Lee. That is Schmitty.
That's me.
What's up, man?
Just enjoying the weekend.
Yeah, man. It's hot. Hot. Summertime.
Right.
Summertime.
It's new with
this
you.
Is the part where you talk.
Oh. I'm busy pouring beer.
I will be I'm about to head out on vacation, going on a little short vacation, and then I'm taking a few days off work because I got family coming into town. So next week's show will probably be a compilation of things that we recorded at the St. Paul Summer Beer Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's what we're planning?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. But that's next week. This week we've got a jam-packed show.
We do. Jam-packed as always. We've got Christian Dixon from Summit Brewing here. How you doing, Christian?
I'm good. How's everybody doing out there?
Good, good. We've got Todd from Dakota County Technical College. How you doing, man?
Outstanding. Thanks for having me.
And we've got Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire. How you doing, man? Turn your mic on and tell us how much you love that.
Not too bad. I love that title.
So you've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Let's start with Todd. Let's talk about why you're here. You've got a really fun program going on in Dakota County that I'm a big fan of. Why don't you tell folks a little about it?
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. So Dakota County Technical College, we're out in Rosemount, Minnesota. We're part of MinSCU. We have a brewing and a beer steward technology program in place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 21 credit, two semester program. And the idea is technical education for those interested in going into the brewing industry. We want to kind of provide those entry level exposures to what the brewers are trying to hire.
Mm-hmm.
I use the analogy that it's like tools in the toolbox. I want to do it. I take the class. You're interested. You don't take the class. You walk into Summit, for example,
mm-hmm.
and the conversation is, we're paying you both the same. Who brings more tools in their toolbox to the opportunity? That's the basic concept here.
Right on. So if I'm interested in working at Summit and I'm going up against, say, Jeff took some courses at Dakota County Tech, they're obviously going to give Jeff a bit of the edge. I mean, taking into account maybe his personality, maybe not.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
But, I mean, he's been through it. He's done probably some internship through Dakota County,
yep.
and he's got, like you said, more tools in his toolbox.
Correct. And in all fairness, let's take any existing industry or any existing business off the table, and let's just say it's O'Brien's Brewery. So, you know, if we walk into O'Brien's Brewery and I've done something and the other guy hasn't, Jeff, I would think, would look at it going, where is my better investment? I'm going to pay him both the same amount of money, but who do I not have to explain terminology, technology, sanitation? You know, if you tell someone to go over and, you know, empty out spent grain, the idea is you're going to understand what it is.
See, if I'm running O'Brien's Brewery, I don't have to spend time teaching the new employees how to do things because they come in with already that base level of knowledge and taking care of brewery operations.
That's what our intent is. Yes, exactly.
That's really cool. Where did the idea for this program come from, Todd?
I don't sleep, and I pay attention to industry. You know, read Minneapolis St. Paul business papers and all these different components.
Mm-hmm.
Follow Mr. O'Brien because he's everywhere doing cool things. So the conversation basically happened in my head, and then I took it to my wife and just like, are you crazy? Todd, you don't drink. Well, I can start. No, you can't. yeah, don't you have enough to do? Well, yeah, I do, but this looks really cool. So it's more about an opportunity or a value to the industry. Dakota County Technical College, our business is to educate for employment.
Mm-hmm.
No one was doing education around this industry in this geographical location. I got very lucky and very supportive from the administration of the college. We did the research. We talked to the people, made a couple trips out of state, saw some people that are doing it. And I still feel it is an outstanding opportunity, not only for the industry, but for students interested to get the exposure and the experience. We put together a nice conversation. We took it to this college. College approved. And this is a huge finance. I mean, mm-hmm. we spent a lot of money here.
Well, yeah, you've got some pretty neat systems in place at the college. I mean, you guys are actually brewing at Dakota County, right? You've got, what is it, five small setups there?
What we've got is we've got 10 of the Sabco Brew Magic systems.
Not cheap.
you know, and we have 10 of them. And then we also then have 20 S&S BrewTech fermenters. Now, they're smaller fermenters. They're 7-gallon size. But the idea is we want to expose students from our perspective in a Lego model to keep the cost down instead of this monolithic, huge, Surly Summit shell sort of, you know, we can't do that. The other conversation is I want students to have more touches. Technology is touches. You know, if you're technology education, you're welding, you're pulling wrenches, you're taking parts, you're doing things. We're able to take a core group of let's say, three students and in theory assign them their own brewery. The other thing that I think is pretty cool on the S&S BrewTech side is that we put a glycol system in. So we've got our 20 brewer fermenters running off of a glycol system, which is more of an industry standard than me brewing beer in my garage with a cooler and iced water and, you know, an aquarium pump. So the big, I guess, the message people talk about, geez, I wish they had that when I was in college. This isn't about beer. This is about getting to that understanding of what happens when you do all of these things and you do all of these things well, here's the outcome. Here's the value. No student from ours are going to walk into a space and say, I'm here to brew today.
Oh, I don't get to take the Brewing 101 at DCTC and then become the next Christian Dixon?
Easy.
No, you don't. The my perspective of this program is the realization from students that it is hot, it is dirty, it is long, you're wet, you are busting your hump to do something that you're extremely passionate about. I enjoy what I do on a daily basis. Do I know what I want to do when I grow up? I don't yet. and I'm a great grandfather, so it's like, you know, it's interest, feed that passion. And out of that, we believe that we are going to produce very capable employees for this industry. You'd mentioned internship. Part of our program is a 128-hour internship. So we have 55-ish students start the program last fall. They've all done that. So industry has been at least opened the door to say, let's get 128 hours of work out of that guy. We have students working in industry throughout the metro, and I'd have to confirm, but you know, the Rochester market's coming up pretty big.
Yeah,
I know we've got one or two students driving up from there, and maybe even more from that area for this fall start.
Wow, that's really cool.
So it isn't just Minneapolis, St. Paul.
That's really
by
neat.
No means.
You know, if I can just add something, Todd came to me early on and sat down over beers, I think at Urban Growler, and he talked a little bit more about the program, and I'm a huge supporter of what Todd is doing down at DCTC with this program. You know, in dealing with startup breweries, you know, when you're out trying to talk to banks and about looking to, you know, give them a loan and things, one of the first things they always ask is, what kind of experience do you have on commercial brewing equipment? And there's so many folks that are great home brewers, but there is a step between being an awesome home brewer and running your own brewery. And this is a great program for a couple of reasons. Number one, I look at it as, for those that are working at, you know, some of the existing breweries in town as a brewer that decide they want to go pro or go on their own, this backfills in those positions. The other thing is, like Todd mentioned, you're learning how to fix equipment when it breaks. You realize what, you know, it's not a glamorous, sexy business all the time. It is a lot of hard work. So I think it's great. And the last thing we need, and with all the talk in this community about, have we reached a saturation point, and you know, what are we at the tipping point? The last thing we need is a brewery to start up where they don't know what they're doing and have it shut down. That's the worst kind of PR we could have for this industry. So for Todd's program to be out there and educating folks that maybe have that experience as a home brewer but need to know, how do you brew commercially? Do you want to go work for a Summit? Or do you want to go start your own thing? This is a good starting point to if you want to if you're serious about doing this as a profession rather than just a hobby, Todd's program is a very good place to start and worth the investment. And other states are doing this. This is new for Minnesota, but there's schools in Wisconsin that have this type of program. And I know that, you know, and I've talked with Todd off, you know, occasionally about, you know, helping him kind of navigate the red tape that is liquor law in this state and the feds. And, you know, he is kind of a pioneer. And as I say, pioneers end up with the arrows in their backs.
Mm-hmm.
This is new. You know, you'd go to the state and say, well, what kind of license do we need? Well, we don't have anything. It's a state college. Can't you figure something out?
Right.
So, you know, this is, I applaud what he's doing. I think it's great for the industry. Whether it's going to graduate an employee of a brewery or another brewery owner, I think it's providing needed experience that is going to ultimately be beneficial to the industry as a whole.
You know, I think you make a great point about going from the home brewer to the commercial production brewer, Jeff. You know, I work on my car at home when something goes wrong with it or when it needs maintenance, but that's a far cry from somebody else paying me to fix their car. Right, I think that there's a huge difference in being able to do those two things, and I think that that's exactly the situation we have a lot of times with brewers. You know, it's fine for them to do large batches of homebrew and to dial in those recipes at home, but it's a huge difference between doing that at home and then putting the large scale brews out to market.
Exactly. The trick is, how do you take this great homebrew that you do and brew it on commercial equipment with consistency? And that is a skill that you can only learn, you know, working on with those touches,
like Todd was saying.
Yep.
You know, the education is touches and repetition and being able to get those tactile experiences in. And that's where I think those internships are of value, right?
Well, very much so to the student, but as well to industry, to realize that this is what we are attempting to put into the market for employment base. These are the students. These are skill sets. Anyone that knows me, I'm a huge soft skills guy. If you're interested in technology, I can teach you the technology skills. It's a soft skill. So there's a huge parameter to that, too. You know, are you a right fit? The other thing that I think is critical is knowing the job before and after yours to do a good job at it. So, you know, what we're trying to do is, even if I just go into, you know, O'Brien's, and I go there just to have beer and BS. Would I take the course? You know what? If you got up to, you know, about $5,000, which can be fishing trips for some guys, you mm-hmm. know, you want to come and spend two semesters with us and get a different perspective of it or a better understanding of it, maybe then be interested. You know, you don't want to invest in all the money in the equipment to do homebrew. So let's take a look at what we're doing at the college. And that's a very entry. I think the students come to us in three different buckets. One third that are going to be in industry and probably are currently, and they're augmenting. Those that are very curious about, and they maybe want to do something additional. You know, they're an Uber guy and they want to make a couple more bucks or whatever it might be. The other ones are just kind of curious about, what's this all about? You know, a better understanding of it. You know, I think it's a great opportunity.
No, I think it is too. I think that there's a lot of fun stuff. You know, I'm looking forward to, you know, an early retirement where I could spend a little money doing, you know, education on things that interest me. You know, I get into technology a little bit. I'm admittedly a bad brewer, and I would like to spend some money and time educating on you know, being a better brewer. I could see this being definitely an avenue for that, you know, taking some time to, you know, if I can fit it into my schedule, how do I become a better brewer, you know?
Yeah, it just sounds fun. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, it sounds like a fun thing to learn how to do. Whether or not you end up actually doing anything professional with it or not, that's a secondary thing. But, I mean, I know for just speaking for myself, I've been interested and passionate about the industry and the product for a long time. I would love to get my hands on the equipment and actually learn how to do it.
How far do you guys delve into the science of brewing in the courses? I'm assuming you guys practice pitching and milling the grain and everything that goes along with it, but how deep into the science do you guys get?
Microbiology, yeast counts, recipe creation, understanding the components that make up and what does this ingredient do to that. That's part of the focus of the class. By no means, we don't have a Summit laboratory space, but students are being exposed to maybe even more than some of the local breweries currently have access to. Mm-hmm. It's important because we have to understand and know those components. Are they all going to be, master's levels at microbiology and yeast counts? Of course not. But they're going to understand it and understand the reasons why. Why is sanitation important? You know, what happens if you don't do this? I think students today are working on sensory. So we do things around taints and sensory within the beer product itself. And something that I think is really cool is we've got a keg wash on campus. I don't know if everybody in the industry has their own keg wash because it's expensive and it's not a great job. But even just to say to a student, what does a full keg weigh? You know, well, I don't know. It's like I'm buying it by 12 ounces at a time.
Right.
So, you know, so we can get them kind of experiences and exposures that I think are pretty cool.
And if folks want to find out more about the Conecuh Tech Brewing Program, they should go to dctc.edu. Christian, did you start your brewing career as an intern?
I did not. I started at Summit as a volunteer, basically. So, a friend asked me to come help out when they needed it.
Kind of an intern.
More or less. Not in the brewing department, though. That was in packaging. So that was just some grunt work for a little while that got me in the door. So... it took me about 5 years of working different positions in the brewery and going to brewing school to eventually work my way up into a brewing position.
Where did you go to brewing school?
I went to Siebel. I did their online course, and it takes about a year. And I did it over the course of 2 years just for different reasons, but it worked out really well. It was a good program as well. So,
Todd, are there plans to expand the program beyond – what exists now is kind of a 2-semester course? Are there plans to make it more in depth, maybe add a 200, 300 series level and make it something that's akin to a Davis or a Siebel, maybe long term?
To aspire to be a Siebel or a Davis is it would
a man's got to have goals.
Yeah. Goals and dreams and the nightmares, right? What I've always talked about is augmentation to what we do. So it fits along your exact ask. So what I would eventually love to work through this program would be to come back and add additional credit content. Maybe we just want to focus on electrical and welding. Okay, we can do that. We're a technical college. We can do that.
That makes a lot of sense.
We have the ability to do things around marketing, graphic design, web page design. We can do that. We're a technical college. We could do things around specifics, around accounting. And with Mr. O'Brien's assistance, we could do things around law and the legal side of it as well. So that is, in my head, things that keep me awake at night would be to come back and say, Andrew, you've got the 21. Let's come back and do another 3-credit in this deliverable. With that, because it is in theory, it would be less hands-on technical. We could look at moving that to an online deliverable as well, which fits with our students' employment. You know, our students come to us, they got full-time day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do for that? Well, we say, commit all day on Friday, Group A. Group B, you're here all day on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So they still do their work. We have one student, I think it's really cool, went to his boss. Let's say he's a motorcycle mechanic on the east side of the metro.
Right.
He went to his boss and said, I want to do this on Friday. Boss said, cool, let's work out your schedule. So even his employer was accommodating to say, let's help you out with this.
Very neat.
So
I wish my employer would do that. I want to go take some brewing courses, man. I think it'd be really neat to see you guys add a laboratory program. You know, it comes up on the show all the time, the fact that there's not the lab being an integral part of the brewery the breweries all across the state of Minnesota. You know, I know, Christian, you guys have a phenomenal lab at Summit.
Yeah.
But you guys have made that investment, and I think from very early on to make sure that that's a part of the brewery there.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I started there, it was sort of a smaller iteration of itself now, and we've hired different quality people over the years who've brought on new machinery, new rooms, new entire facilities within the lab. So we now, I think, are one of the most extensive brewing labs in the state, rather. So
I would say in the U.S. So
probably.
Don't be modest. Yeah. I would say in the U.S. But to your point, you're exactly right. And how I need to focus, or how the college needs to focus, that is not so much in trying to get the students in the door for that program, but to engage with the industry partners and go to the persons that don't have the extensiveness of a Summit lab and say, what do you need and how can we help you? And get them in the room first.
Mm-hmm.
We then work with them to create and give them the deliverable course content that they need from a brewing space. From that, then we can turn that into a 4-credit program to now say, industry persons, hey, O'Brien's Brewery is just here, and they did this as a company, a few of them. Now, as they hire new people, they go, we need you to do this for us. I think that there's a path there.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Now, Jeff, you've got an exciting book you've got in front of you. We talk a lot about beer here, but we also talk a lot about spirits. Mm-hmm. And distilling is, in my mind, the next kind of wave of craft beverage. And you've got some things that you're working on in the distilling world. Tell us a little about it.
Yeah, well, I was approached a few months ago by a legal publisher in town to contribute to a book they were putting together. It's a collection of writings by various lawyers that are in the distilling space.
Mm-hmm.
And they submitted some questions and things that they wanted us to answer. And so the book is called Moonshiner to Craft Distillery, Leading Lawyers on the Business of Distilling. And it's put out by a publisher called Aspitor, which is a division of the legal publisher Thomson Reuters.
Kind of sounds like a heavy metal, like Norwegian black metal band name. Aspitor.
Sounds like a good brewery name, actually. Aspitor Brewing. Anyway, so I have a chapter in there.
Aspitor? Maybe not.
My chapter is called Minnesota Distilling Industry Grows as Longstanding Laws Change. And so it's written a little bit more towards lawyers, but I tried to keep mine pretty straightforward so that non-lawyers could appreciate it too.
Thank you.
No problem. And so it talks about what we've talked about on this show for many, many times, whether it be the brewing or the distilling industry, that, you know, Minnesota has had laws on the books for a long, long time. And as those laws change, that are more in the that are more in favor of the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Big shock, the industries grow,
right?
You know, and it goes back to the the Surly Bill, which at the same time it was allowing tap rooms, also drastically reduced the permitting fee for a distillery.
Yeah, it was
$30,000 down to $1,000.
Yeah, little decrease,
a little bit. And of course we've had. Distilleries now are allowed cocktail rooms, and they're allowed now to sell one 375 milliliter bottle per customer per day. So it's little chinks in the armor. Obviously, they have a huge fight against some very powerful special interests. Mm-hmm. I'm very pleased to have. I've been offering, and they took me up on my offer to the distillers did. To help put together the Minnesota Distillers Guild. So maybe in a future show, as that gets up and running, we'll get some of the folks on from the guild to talk about what they're going to do. But, they're recognizing that you have to play the game over in St. Paul if you're going to get things changed for your benefit. Laws don't change just because it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what happens at the Capitol is everybody is up there playing a game,
yep.
Either asking for laws to be made or changed or repealed for their benefit.
Yeah, and every existing law has a constituency, has somebody who benefits from it. So when you want a law to change, you got to understand that you're fighting against somebody who is very invested in keeping things in the status quo.
That's exactly right. And, the distillers have far fewer, far fewer freedoms right now compared to the brewers. And that's partly, I think, because, we have had breweries in this state for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Phillips, we really haven't had distilleries up until Panther opened in Alexandria. And then you start, and then with the reduction of the fee, then you started to see a distilling industry in this state. So I think that's part of the reason. It's just made at this point, they're simply victims of timing. It's just that they haven't had an industry, and they haven't been on the radar at the legislature. I mean, we've seen with the breweries as they introduce themselves to the powers that be over in St. Paul and get legislators to see what they do and the jobs they create and the tax dollars that are generated. Laws have changed, and I think that, you know, that's where I think the distilling industry is going, because the, you know, whether it be brewing or distilling, you know, this is an agricultural state. What breweries and distilleries are doing is using products made by Minnesota farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a nice coalition of maybe some folks that maybe are trending, you know, maybe some local legislators that are more in favor of craft beer and craft spirits. But you also get those legislators from outstate Minnesota that represent, you know, rural districts that say, hey, this is good for my constituency too. So that's part of what I think the challenge is is to continue to show how this benefits other constituencies in the state. And that's how you get, you know, basically you line up your coalition and you go over and you create legislation. So we'll see how this pans out in the years to come. I was very happy to be a contributor to the book. I do throw in there some kind of nuts and bolts steps as to, you know, the legal steps to starting a distillery. You know, we were talking a minute ago with whether it be a brewery or a distillery, you know, I think a lot of people see this as kind of a very glamorous, you know, sexy business, but there's a lot to it.
You're talking
microbiology, you're talking electrical, you're talking, you know, welding. When you're talking brewery law, there's not a whole heck of a lot of brewery law, quote unquote. It's a lot of business law,
mm-hmm.
you know, entity formation and trademarks and securities and, you know, real estate. There's a lot of different legal moving parts that in a vacuum aren't exactly the most interesting thing to a lot of lay people. But when you put them all together and use it to form a brewery or a distillery, now all of a sudden it's really cool and everybody wants to do what I do. And I'm like, it's not that simple. There's a lot more to it. So that's the fun thing that, you know, I'm glad to have it out. I don't even know if it's available yet. And I have no idea what they're going to sell it for. It's a legal publication, so Lord knows what they're, you know, what kind of price they're going to put on it. But if anybody wants, they can contact me and I can help them try to find a copy of it. The other one I'm working on, and we'll talk about this probably in future shows, is there's a book written by an attorney out in California named Candace Moon. And she's a friend of mine. She's called Brew Law 101, the California Edition, a legal guide to operating a brewery. And Candace has put together the Craft Beer Attorney Coalition. I think we might have talked to her in a future show. It's because our firm, Lohmann Abdo, is the local representative of the coalition.
Mm-hmm.
We got approved this week officially. And Candace and I are going to collaborate. And it's always like breweries collaborating on beers. We're going to collaborate on a Minnesota edition of this book. So we're in negotiations right now. So you can imagine two lawyers negotiating how long that's going to take. So, you know, this may be the equivalent of Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy. This may see the light of day someday, but we're working on it.
Todd, any plans for Distilling 101?
Wow. another one of those nightmares. You know, yes and no. I want to make sure that we can do brewery and brewing really well,
mm-hmm.
and gain that respect in the industry,
mm-hmm.
and prove that, and then augment what we do currently with the 21 credit before we get too deep into the weeds on that sort of thing.
Very good.
We've had conversations, but, you know, still way too soon. I'd rather be really good at one or two things, and then instead of just being moderate at multiples. So
there you go. I can appreciate that. Dixon, do you have any experience with distilling at all? Are you just
just my family on both sides? We're moonshiners down in North Carolina and in Virginia.
But, really?
Beyond that, I just have been told to stay away from the still when I was a kid.
That's, you know, with that facial hair, I knew I saw him somewhere. I've seen you on TV. I know I have.
He's got the awesome chops going. Maybe a few guest appearances on the old Moonshiner show.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your beer. You've got the Unchained number 22.
Number 22.
You know, deuce, deuce. It's a cream ale, and you added some Hawaiian ginger to it. I'm really digging this beer, man.
That's right. Thank you very much. I'm digging it, too, and people are receiving it well. I'm really excited about that. I wanted to create a beer that was excellent for the summer months, and I think I pulled it off. So,
walk us through the process of making this beer a little bit. I understand you had two different fermentation processes.
That's right. So we started out by brewing the lager. The beers were brewed identically, so the recipes were more or less the same. I mashed at slightly different temperatures for the lager versus the ale. But so we first brewed the lager. That was pitched with Munich Lager number 2 yeast and fermented cold. And so that's a bit of a longer, slower process. So we let that take place. And about 2.5, 3 weeks later, we brewed the ale version. So it was also, you know, like I say, identical to the lager, except when we chilled that one down, we pitched American ale number 2 yeast to create the ale half of it. And so that fermented relatively quickly. Within a week, we were able to chill that down and get the yeast out of there. And so it's interesting, you know, the way that these two dimensions come together into one beer. The lager, you know, because it's a colder process, perhaps the ginger was kept a little more in the beer because it wasn't driven off by heat during fermentation. So I feel like that may be one case. You know, it's really interesting when you brew a one-time beer that you've never made before, and, you know, you've got these ideas about how it's going to perform and how things are going to go, and then it obviously does its own thing the way it's going to do it. And so it's been a, you know, a really neat process to be able to do this.
Did it surprise you a little bit? I mean, did it? How far did the final product come from what you thought it was going to be?
You know, it really, the finished beer is exactly what I could have hoped for. It is what I was shooting for, and that's great. You know, basically, in some ways, it did the opposite of what I expected it to do in the brew house and in the fermentation cellar. So that was the unexpected part. And by that, I mean, you know, the residual sugars, I expected the lager to dry out and the ale to be a little sweeter. But in fact, the lager ended up a little sweet and the ale dried out completely. So they did the opposite of what I expected, but still the inverse was the same. It was, you know.
Nice how that works out.
Exactly.
So is that the normal process for a cream ale, it is to do a lager and ale and blend them together?
That's definitely one way to do it. I think most breweries that actually produce cream ale, they brew an ale and then handle it cold as you would a lager. So, you know, and maybe even fermenting that a little colder than you normally would, and depending on the yeast strain and things like that as well. So,
okay. And then how did you add the ginger to it, and how do you know how much to add?
Well, I based the ginger amounts on homebrew experiences because I've always loved ginger as an ingredient. And so I've made some Imperial Pilsners in the past that had a lot of ginger, mm-hmm. and I knew that by my recipe formulation, I had been using it at about a rate of 3 pounds per barrel, and that adds a lot of ginger character to the beer. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted this to be primarily a beer with you know, a little bit of ginger going on in the background, and so I basically cut that into one third. I did 1 pound per barrel, and I'd brewed a pilot batch of this beer just to test things out, test my ratios and all of that. But I used different ginger than I ended up using in the final beer. And so the ginger character in the final beer is much better than I could have ever hoped for. And in the way that I added it, we did a couple of different things. For the lager, it almost all was added at about 20 minutes. And at that point, just sort of uniquely, I had just received the ginger the day before, and it was still frozen. So I was putting these 5-gallon chunks of ginger into the kettle, which bobbed around like a boat in there for a while and slowly dissolved away over the next, you know, 20 minutes. And so it was sort of like a time release ginger addition.
So skin on, roots, everything?
I believe they're skinned, but it's pureed. And
okay, puree.
So basically they skin it, puree it, still raw. It had to be cooked. You know, it wasn't processed in any way, which is another factor that I went for. I didn't want it to be ginger that had been heated once already. I wanted to get as much of those volatile, you know, flavor compounds in the beer as I could. So I went for raw ginger. And so in the lager, it was frozen. 3 weeks later, we brewed the ale. It had had time to sit in the cooler and thaw. And so then I had a regular slurry. And with that, I added it later. So the first ginger addition in the lager went in about 20 minutes to the end of the boil. For the ale, I did it more like 5 minutes, right near the end of the boil, so that I could try to keep a lot of those volatiles intact in the beer. So
very cool. I was wondering how you would add it. Like, did he dry hop it with ginger? How did he get the, you know, that? Because I mean, you could go pretty far south with adding some ginger to a beer. Like, for me, it's nice, cool, refreshing, like you said, in the background, but it's mm-hmm. there and you can enjoy it, but it's not in any way offensive, mm-hmm. but it's there,
yeah.
right? I mean, it just plays a perfect role in the beer.
And it's definitely, I feel it's temperature dependent. Like sometimes when these are ice cold and I crack it open, I'm like, oh no, it's got no ginger character at all. But then it warms up 5 degrees and it's all there.
I think it's interesting. Your thought process was, at what point do they add the ginger and, you know, the dry hop conversation? In my head, I'm going, ginger's expensive. How does that equate to the price on the shelf? And so it's interesting how the different analogies were coming through. But it is if I had a sample, it is really nice tasting.
Awesome. Well, and that's something that's pretty unique about the Unchained series that we're allowed to brew at Summit. It's, you know, a brewer-only series of beers, and we're essentially given a blank check to just sort of make a beer however we see fit. And that being the case, I was able to source really good German malt from Cologne, Germany. They also gifted me with some of the Barca pills that we used in our Keller pills. So nice. 2/3 of the malt in this beer are German grown and malted and really high quality. And then the other third is excellent quality as well from Rahr here, the two row that we use in all of our beers. And so between that and then purchasing the ginger, you know, I had all these different options, pasteurized, which at one point I was considering sort of dry hopping it with ginger or adding it basically into the chilled wort stream. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, with the pasteurized ginger, I just didn't feel like I could get the character that I wanted. And so we ended up going with the raw stuff. But, you know, I had a blank check to buy ginger, and it was kind of ridiculous. So it's a lot of fun.
I got to say, the Unchained series that Summit's doing is one of my favorite things happening in all the Minnesota beer right now. I look forward to every release. Every release is unique. It's interesting. It's fun to talk about. So nice job. This is a really, really tasty beer.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, you guys have got a ton of stuff going on at Summit with, you know, the Unchained series, and you've got a bunch of anniversary beers and stuff going on
this year, especially. Yeah, we're at our 30th year in production since 1986, and so every month this year we're doing a smaller batch in our tap room that basically all the brewery employees are collaborating on monthly beers, which is kind of a fun one. So get down to the tap room and try that out. And then otherwise, we're doing 4 full-scale production beers to celebrate our 30th anniversary. We've already done a double IPA, which is a passion fruit bomb if you haven't tried it.
I've loved that one. I've loved the Keller Pils.
The Keller Pils is seriously good drinking beer.
Phenomenal.
Amazing.
Phenomenal. Just heap more praise upon what you guys are doing.
So last Friday, we brewed a barley wine that'll be basically released this fall. So it's going to sit for 6 months or so before we package it. But that barley wine was basically a 3X EPA. So we took our extra pale ale recipe, concentrated it, and we're making a barley wine based on that. So we're all pretty excited about the turnout of that guy.
You know, this is a good point to good time to bring up. You know, there's always this discussion about, are we at our saturation point, or is the craft beer market faltering in Minnesota? And everybody seems to want to like hasten its demise. But the thing is, and this is a good example, here's a brewery that's been around for 30 years and is still innovating. You know, mm-hmm. the Unchained. I agree with Andrew. The Unchained series is always great,
because it gives you guys a chance to come up with your own, you know, it's your own ideas and get them to market. And I think as long, one of the hallmarks of our craft brewing industry is the constant innovation and the constant creativity. And I think as long as we have that, we're going to have a strong craft beer industry in this state, a strong craft beer market. We're not just going to do the same old, same old. Yes, we're all going to have, they're all going to have season, you know, a regular standard beers and some regular seasonals, but this ability to constantly innovate, and you know, Summit does it, Shell's does it, you know, all these different breweries that have been around for a long time are still doing it, and yep. And I think that's really the key to the long term success of the craft beer industry in Minnesota. It's not so much the volume of breweries that we have, but it's as long as we maintain our innovation edge, we'll be okay.
Well, and I think what we'll see as the market matures, quote unquote, is we'll see more niches kind of develop. I think we'll see more of the sour culture on the side of things. I think we'll see more people gravitate towards the quote unquote session drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we'll see everybody kind of carve out themselves a little piece of the marketplace where they can kind of specialize in one spot or another, be it, you know, the Belgian part of the market, the German style part of the market, you know, just the different parts where you can do what you do and be known for that thing and do it the best you can and make that your hallmark. You know, I see some brewers who throw everything they can at the wall and see what sticks. And I think that in some ways I can appreciate the ambitiousness, but in other ways it comes across as a lack of focus in my mind.
Yeah.
Back to the Summit discussion. After the barley wine, you've got one other special one coming out, right?
Yes, we're going to make, basically it's going to be, we're going to call it a West London Ale. And so it's going to be a, sort of a take on a ESB, which our ESB went away back in, I want to say 2009, which was one of our regular full-scale production beers.
Didn't it cause a riot when it went away?
In my heart, it did. you know, it's definitely a beer that has a lot of people wanting it back. So I'm excited for this beer. We're going to source some amazing ingredients for it. Really, I'm actually a little bit out of touch with that one. That's more or less, Damian McCann, our head brewer, he's gonna head that one. So,
and you guys are gonna have a hell of a party to celebrate 30 years, right?
That's right. We have our backyard bash coming up on September 10th. Tickets are on sale now. It's $30 advance and $40 at the door, and a portion of that will be going to the Minnesota Music Coalition. For our 30th anniversary, we're going to have a heck of a party in the backyard. We have Bob Mould, Minnesota music legend, going to headline the show, along with a lot of local talent, Bully, Dem Atlas, the Bad Bad Hats, and Hot Pants DJs filling in the gaps. But so we're pretty excited for the way it's going to go down. We're going to do some special beers, some special cask presentations to have throughout the day. That's going to be, I believe, from 12 to 8 on Saturday the 10th.
That should be great. I'm gonna try to make it out there for that for sure. You're going to have some oh man, all kinds of food is going to be there.
Yeah, no, the food trucks are going to be
Anchor Fish and Chips, which is one of my favorites for sure. You're going to have World Street Kitchen, Black Forest, Pizza Luce.
Yeah.
You're going to have it all. Awesome.
Yes.
I'm going to be there for sure. You'll find me out there drinking.
Can't wait.
Very good. Well, and I think that's another great episode of the Minnesota Beer Cast. What do you say, Andrew? Should we wrap it up? Go find a couple beers?
I'm down with that. I finished off my my little, what is it, Zingiber?
Zingiber.
Right? Zingiber. Yeah,
however you want to say it is fine.
Zingiber.
Zingiber.
I'm going to go Zingiber. I finished that up in here, so ready to pour me another cold one. Great episode, guys. That was a lot of fun. Good conversation.
All right. That'll do it.
We will be back with an episode next week where we will be replaying some of the great stuff we did at the St. Paul Summer Beer Fest. The first time I've heard a lot of you hearing that. That'll be a lot of fun. And then back with a brand new episode in 2 weeks. Thanks so much.
And one other thing, as we go out here, we had a gift pack for Kate Ness. Kate S. Ness on Twitter used the hashtag MNBeerCast. So we got a gift pack for her from Enki Brewing.
I'm friends with Kate on Twitter and Facebook. So, Kate, just contact me directly, and I will coordinate with you to get you that gift pack.
And if you're interested in getting fun and delicious stuff, use that hashtag. We've got another gift pack coming up.
Hashtag MNBeerCast on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. It all works. We check it all.
Sick.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Cheers.